Today, I'm going to speak on, I entitled this talk, Are You Under the Spell of Maya? Illusion. It's a question we have to ask. Are you under the spell of Maya? Illusion. Maya means illusion. So we'll explore that somewhat today. Ma means not. Ya means this. Not this. It is pretty much for sure that if we're all here in the material world in a perishable container, that's a body, perishable container, you're in Maya. No offense, friends. Because in order to get here, you'd have to be in Maya. So let's take a look at that. In the Mahabharata, I found this verse. There are five kinds of illusion, or Maya. Number one, accepting the body to be the self. Number two, thinking that enjoying your senses is the highest standard of happiness. Number three, being anxious due to false identification with the body and your current identity in this lifetime as if it were the all in all. Number four, grieving over that which does not happen and the people and things that have been lost. Number five, thinking there is no God, or there is something beyond God, or that you are God. These are all forms of illusion that if you've transcended some of these and you've figured them out, very good. There might be one or two that you haven't done yet. So let's look at them piece by piece. First one, number one, accepting the body to be the self. Illusion or Maya is to mistake that which is impermanent to be permanent. That which is full of misery to be happiness. That which is impure to be pure. And that which is not the self to be the self. So, that which is impermanent, mistaking that which is impermanent, which is the physical existence, the bodily existence, to be permanent. The permanent existence is the spiritual existence. That which is full of misery, which is material attachment. Material attachment. You may not be miserable 24/7. I certainly hope you are not. But you will have experiences, ups and downs in life, and at times you'll be very sorrowful, very sad. Sometimes due to loss, and sometimes due to failure, and sometimes, well, there's many reasons. So, that which is full of misery, which is material attachment, to be happiness. Happiness is love for God. You may argue and say, no, happiness is to fall in love and be in a loving relationship. Yeah, might be for a while, but it's impermanent. It always comes to an end, no matter how wonderful your relationship is. Death will end it. So, the loving relationship we try to cultivate here, and that is in the science or practicing the science of bhakti yoga, is love for God. Why? Because you begin to feel its effects now in this lifetime, and it does not end with death. And upon liberating yourself from material existence and samsara, reincarnation, then it only, this loving experience or blissful experience in love with God only expands. It expands while you're here and expands beyond once you reach the spiritual world. And that which is impure to be pure. Material existence is impure. And spiritual existence is only the only true purity. And of course, purity on this plane, in this world, is a very relative conception. Right? And that which is not the self, the body, to be the self, the soul. Okay. Bhagavad Gita 7:27, Iccha Dvesha Samuttena Dvandva Mohena Bharata Sarva Bhutani Sammoham Sargeyanti Parantapa. Which means, O scion or descendant of Bharata, O conqueror of the foe, this is Krishna speaking. He's speaking to Arjuna. All living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by dualities arising from Iccha Dvesha. You know what that means? That means attraction and repulsion. We are involved in attracting things to ourselves that we want. Desire. Iccha also means desire. And that's what we try to draw to us. Things that we prefer. Things that are part of our, perhaps our goals in life. And then repulsion is that which we don't like. Or people we don't like, or anything we don't like. Recently we had an election in the U.S. You might have heard of it. I don't know how you escaped it. If you did, that's... I admire you, how you did that. And those who, by democratic process, democracy is an interesting thing. Everybody gets a vote. You know what they say, you win some, you lose some. And then you walk away and you get another shot at it 4 years from now. That's democracy. Sounds fair. No, no, no. If you don't get what you want, Iccha Dvesha. If I didn't get my Iccha, my desire, then Dvesha, I'm angry. I'm repulsed. I'm going to march. Have a protest. It's not democracy. Anyway, the point being here, you must rise above these dualities. The dualities of what's desirable, what isn't desirable, beautiful, not beautiful, fat, thin, ideal, less than ideal. That only happens down here in the material world. In the spiritual world, everything is on the absolute platform. Everything is wonderful. There's no shadow, there's no darkness, there's nothing to be repulsed by. The ego. Let's talk about the ego. How do you get a body? You got a body because you got an ego. How'd you get an ego? There's self and there's ego. Aren't they the same thing? Not exactly. In the spiritual world, we have the self and we have an eternal identity. In Krishna consciousness, we understand that one's identity, spiritual identity, may not be exactly what you have now as your identity, but your spiritual identity, your siddha deha, your spiritual body, is your eternal identity. And we don't embrace the losing your identity part. that is certainly available for those that want to merge into the energy of the Godhead. It's available. So we are more interested in the eternal identity. If you're a very advanced soul, you may already know your eternal identity. Otherwise, it will be revealed to you when you have qualified yourself for this. So, coming in here, we have an ego. Ego is required when you think you're the controller. I'm in charge here. I'm in control. And I will try to control as many things and people as I possibly can. That's what I'm doing down here. I'm the little Ishwara. I'm the little God. So in order to actually believe that and convince yourself of that, which is called Maya, illusion, you are provided with this wonderful thing called an ego. It's a sense of self. But shall we say it's first of all, a false sense of self? Shall we say in many cases it's an overinflated sense of self? I know also that in many cases it's a deflated sense of self. Well, who would have a deflated sense of self? The ones that are not so good at controlling everything. They may have a deflated sense. This ego is a very interesting thing, because unless and until you overcome it, you don't get free passage out of here. You don't get to catch the next ferry out of the material world. The ego, somewhat like a dumb animal, is very territorial in nature. Once he stakes his claim, why do I say he? Because the ego is masculine. If you want to look at masculine and feminine, the subconscious, the soul, is feminine. The ego is masculine. Once he stakes his claim, he defends his turf, motivated by his basic instinct for survival. What you're trying to do here, when you go on a path of spiritual development and spiritual realization, you are trying to empower the self, the true self, and in so doing, you must diminish and neutralize the ego, the material identity, correct? And of course, the ego, he goes quietly, right? Oh, no, my friends. He doesn't. When threatened, the ego savagely defends his ground. Even when the water hole has dried up and the food supply has migrated miles away, he still jealously defends his realm, just like this dumb animal. It is fascinating the level of illusion the predator or the entrenched ego indulges in. So, what is that supposed to mean? As you peel the layers off said ego, and you come into a greater state of enlightenment, he does not like that. And he will latch on more powerfully than ever. Is it a battle? Oh, yeah. It's a battle. Will he give up? No. Is it the hardest battle you will ever fight in your entire life? Oh, yes. Is it the hardest battle you will ever fight in your entire existence, no matter how many lifetimes? Oh, most certainly. Most certainly. It's a fight to the death. Death of whom? Your ego or your body? If you want to overcome repeated birth and death, you must kill off the ego. There must be a death involved. Otherwise, you keep taking birth and coming back again and again and again. And the ego celebrates his victory yet again. Right? Okay, let's talk about number two. Thinking that enjoying your senses is the highest standard of happiness. Well, you know, there's a few things you can do here in the good old material world that are kind of fun and stimulating, at least for a bit, right? We have senses. We can enjoy some sense gratification as long as we don't bring the house down. It's okay. But the problem is we have to deal always or fairly constantly with the threefold miseries of life. Tri klesha. Give me the Sanskrit, please, for the threefold miseries. Adibautik. Adidaivik. Adiatmik. Very good. Well done. Adiatmik, adibautik, adidaivik. Atma, self. Your body ever bother you? Ever get pains? I got one right here in my knee. Your mind ever bother you? Give you no peace? Your mind want to stay up all night and you want to sleep? Your mind's going, yeah, but what about this? Oh, you have to think about that. You should worry about this now. Yeah, the mind? Adiatmic miseries. Adibautik comes from the root Buddha, which means beings, other beings that bring you stress, like your boss, like way too many bicycles on the street, for example. No offense, cyclists. Like animals that attack you. I mean, could be anything. Like the revenue. I don't know. There's all kinds of persons and animals and beings that can cause you upset. And adidaivik, what's daiva? God, deva, daiva. It's the from the gods. In this sense, it means the demigods who bring what? Cold, too much rain, earthquakes, drought, tornadoes, hurricanes, many things. Those are threefold miseries that we have to deal with. So no matter how good you are at enjoying yourself here in the material world, you still have to deal with this. Here's a bit of a purport from Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivedanta Swami, is the founder, Acharya, of Krishna Consciousness, which just recently celebrated 50 years in existence. He's got a lovely letter from Narendra Modi. I saw it online. Narendra Modi, the Prime Minister of India, wrote a very lovely letter of appreciation for the work that the devotees have done. Not just feeding people or helping people, but for spreading God consciousness. I don't know a lot of world leaders that would be praising spiritual people for spreading God consciousness. Do you know some? I think they would praise it, people, for not spreading God consciousness. You know, we want how do they say it? What kind of society is that? When, what's the word?
Secular.
Secular. Antoinette always knows. Secular society. Don't get God involved in the government. That's a secular society. So, Prabhupada says, Maya, the material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always giving us trouble in the shape of the threefold miseries. This material energy is constituted by the three modes of nature. What are the three modes of nature? Sanskrit, please. Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. Sattva is? Goodness. Rajas, passion, yeah, or desire. And ignorance is Tamas. Tamas is darkness or ignorance. In order to become realized soul, you must evolve out of these modes. If you were in the mode of ignorance, I don't think you would be sitting here, frankly. This would not appeal to you on any level. Many of us are in the mode of passion. And many of you would be in the mode of goodness or have tremendous amount of the mode of goodness in you to be attracted to God consciousness. You must have. You can't get out of the material world and get off the wheel of repeated birth and death until you are fully established in the mode of goodness, sattva. Right? What's another word for sattva? Truth. Truth. And from there you ascend to vishuddha sattva, pure goodness. That's spiritual consciousness. Sattva is not necessarily spiritual consciousness. You know, people who are humanitarians and who are charitable, benevolent, altruistic, philanthropic, that's sattva too. Right? So, Prabhupada says, one has to raise himself at least to the mode of goodness before the path to understanding the Supreme Lord can be opened. Without raising oneself to the standard of the mode of goodness, one remains in ignorance and passion, which are the cause of demoniac life. This word demoniac has many connotations. A simple connotation, I mean, it can have a wide range of application. Demoniac means when it's all about you and not about anybody else. Or you get what you need to the detriment of others. That's demoniac. It's unkind, it lacks thoughtfulness or compassion. That's what that means, simply put. Those in the modes of passion and ignorance deride the scriptures, deride holy people, and deride the proper understanding of the personality of Godhead. Or they manufacture their own way of elevation. These are some of the defects of human society which has led to demoniac status of life. Or they manufacture their own kind of religion or spiritual practice. What's the quote Prabhupada always used to say? Yatamat tatapat. As many people, so many ways. Prabhupada's not saying that. He's telling you many people say, whatever works for you is fine. You just go ahead and do that. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's spiritual. By definition, it doesn't necessarily mean it will take you where you're going spiritually. You know, if I want to set out for Galway from Dublin and I drive north, will I make it to Galway? No. I won't. I can drive north right to what do you call those things? The Giant's Causeway? Is that what they call that? Right, the very northern part of Ireland. I won't find Galway. I'd have to drive west to get to Galway. So, not every path or every manufactured path that people come up with in their minds. Since the 60s and then the whole New Age explosion around the 80s, 90s, there are a lot of options out there, my friends. A lot of options. Okay. So, here is a quote from Bhagavad Gita 2:60. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind, even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. So how easy is it to overcome the influence of the senses, the yearning, the demands? Gee, if I only had one of those. I'd like a little bowl of ice cream. Well, that ice cream was really, really good. And then, next thing you know, the whole tub, gone. Simple example of the senses being out of control. So, even when you're a very conscientious person and you're trying your best in spiritual life, there are times when your senses will overcome you. It will happen. If it never happens for you, well, God bless you. But for most of us, it happens. So what do we do in times like that? You should berate yourself and whip yourself with a cat of nine tails and feel guilty and starve yourself for the coming week. I don't think so. I think you should be kind and understanding toward yourself. I'm not saying you should let yourself get away with everything, but it's a process. It takes time. To be overly critical and deride yourself, then you end up having a greater negative attitude toward yourself, which in the long run is not going to help you. Right. Okay, the third point was being anxious due to false identification with the body and your current identity in this lifetime as if it were all in all. So, thinking that this world in which we live is the be-all and the end-all is our first mistake. This is the opposite of knowledge. When we go to school, there's many things we need to learn to get by in this world. Education is a good thing, it's not a bad thing. But there's no real education if we don't learn the difference between the body and the soul. And Bhaktivinoda, in one of his songs, is Bhaktivinoda, who is the one of the acharyas or teachers in our line, who is the father of Prabhupada's guru, Bhaktisiddhanta, who was a judge by profession and was an academic. Wrote, how many books did he write, Bhaktivinoda? Close to 100. And he wrote in English, in Bengali, in Sanskrit, something else too. I don't know all the languages he wrote in. Bhaktivinoda, in his younger years, was enamored by education. material education. Material education is functional. It's appropriate in some ways. But it's not the highest education. It can ensnare you in the material world and keep your focus on the material world. I'm not saying you shouldn't get your master's degree or your PhD if that's what you're trying for. But you should understand where it fits in the scheme of things. Real education, real knowledge, is spiritual knowledge. Your material education will die, will end. Your material qualifications will end when your body dies. Not your spiritual education. This is the opposite of knowledge. This is illusion. And it is just this illusion or ignorance which is the cause of our soul's bondage in this prison known as the material world. Real knowledge or spiritual enlightenment unlocks the door to this prison. Unlocks the door to the prison. And is the key to our liberation. So this is a note. I think I made this note at some point. When you can see through the web of illusion, we are caught up in a web of illusion and mistaken notions. When you can see through that web, when you can see with eyes of humility, is humility important? Is it absolutely essential? Absolutely. Because what's the opposite of humility? Pride. Pride or? Arrogance. Oh, our friend the ego. Pride, arrogance, self-importance. Right? When you see with eyes of humility, when you stop leaning on people who drain your energy. Leaning on people who drain your energy, or spending too much time with people who drain your energy. I'm not saying you can't help people and befriend people and, you know, help them out. But if you're with people who constantly drain your energy, it's very, very difficult to have enough energy to do what you need to do to extricate yourself. When you cease to be affected by happiness and distress, that is one of the qualifications for self-realization. You're not affected by happiness and distress. Matra sparshas tu kaunteya shitoshna sukadukada agama paino nityas tangs tatikshas vabharata. The appearance and disappearance of happiness and distress are like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer seasons. And you must learn to tolerate them. Ubharata. That's also what Krishna said to Arjuna. When you can feel the eternal pulse of your soul underneath it all. When you can feel the eternal pulse of your soul underneath this phantasmagoria, this illusion. It is then that you are ready for complete spiritual surrender. You have humility. You're not bothered when you're up, when you're down. You deal with it. You don't hang around people who suck your energy. And you feel that eternal pulse. Then you're ready for spiritual surrender. And at that time, the door will open. And guess who will be on the other side? The little blue guy with the flute. Krishna will be there. If you meditate on Krishna Krishna will be there. If you meditate on Rama, Rama will be there. If you meditate on Nrisinga, Nrisinga will be there. Or maybe you meditate on all of them, and then they'll all be there to greet you. That's what I think. I want to meet them all. I want to go live with Krishna and hang out, but I want to meet some of the players, some of the incarnations. I actually would want to go meet the demigods too on the way up, but that's me. I want to meet all these wonderful souls. What would it be like even to hang out with the gods in Svarga, in the heavenly realm? Can you imagine? It's way beyond this. That's not even the spiritual world. It's exciting. Then you can fall into the loving arms of the Godhead. That's what you want, you know. That's what you want. That's what we all want. Since you were a child, that's what you wanted. First day, day one, out of the womb. Plug into the teat with your mother in her loving arms. All is well with the world. Do you think that instinct, that yearning, that feeling goes away? It never goes away. We just purge it from the database, because we're adults and we have to be strong and we have to be mature. Well, that's what we want in the best sense. We want to be loved. We want to be protected. We want to be held. We want to know that everything will be all right. In the material world, where's the guarantee? There isn't any. It's a very tenuous existence. It's like a gossamer thread that any moment could break. So, what about the ego-centered guy? How does the ego... how's this verse go? Ishvaroham Hambogi Siddho Ham Balavan Sukhi. You know that one? That's Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, verse 13. The demoniac person, or, if you like, the egocentric person, thinks, so much wealth do I have today. I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, but it will increase in the future, more and more. He is my enemy. I have killed him. And my other enemies will also be killed. I am the Lord of everything. Ishvaroham. I am the enjoyer. Aham Bhogi. I am perfect and powerful. Siddho hum, Balavan and happy, Sukhi. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none more powerful and happy as me. I shall perform sacrifices, I shall give some charity, and I shall rejoice. Now it's nice that he's performing a few sacrifices and giving some charity, but it's all about what? It's all about him being recognized and maintaining his position. If you give in charity, is that a good thing? Maybe. If you give in charity and your ego is invested in it and you want recognition for it, then you're still giving in charity. But what mode of nature are you giving it in? The mode of? Passion. The mode of passion. Because you expect return. When you give freely and you expect no return, that is the mode of goodness. If you give to someone who is I don't know, alcoholic or drug addicted. They need charity. You know how they always tell you, I just need a cup of tea. Yeah, well, maybe that's not for a cup of tea. That's giving in the mode of ignorance. It's still charity, but what becomes of it? So, the best charity is given in the mode of goodness to the most... This is Bhagavad Gita, by the way. To the most deserving person. If you want to give in the mode of goodness or in a transcendental manner, then talk to Manu, because they're collecting for the new temple. That will have no negative reaction. Okay. The fourth point. Grieving over that which doesn't happen and the people and things that have been lost. Well, again, I draw on the presidential election. There's a lot of grief and anger because a certain 47% of the populace didn't get what they wanted. So they're throwing the toys out of the pram. You win some, you lose some. I predicted, I wrote my prediction based on Vedic astrological science, and I posted it on Facebook and on my website before the election. And I said that Trump would win the election. And everybody else said Clinton would win the election. Most of the so-called pundits in newspapers and on the mainstream news said Clinton would win the election. The polls said she'd win the election. But she didn't. Trump won the election. So I've predicted elections since 1980, presidential elections in America, and I got them all right. So far. So, point is, whatever happens, happens. And we have to accept it. Okay. And the fifth point, thinking there is no God or that there is something beyond God. Belief in God or theism is essential to a society. We live in a free society. If you want to be an atheist, you can be an atheist. That's fine. But the people who run the government, whether it be a king, a queen, a prime minister, elected officials, must believe in God. And the majority of the people must also believe in God. Ideally, they should all believe in God. Why? When you, let's take an oak tree, a beautiful, lush oak tree. And we saw off one of its great branches with all of its smaller branches and leaves, and the branch falls to the ground. Right? You can give it minerals. You can pour water on it. You can do whatever you want. What will happen to that branch? It will die. Before long. Actually, its process of dying will begin fairly quickly. when you are disconnected from God, it is the same. It's the same. You have to be connected to your source, your creator, or you will die. Your society will die. Your nation will die. It will begin to decay. The more godless you become, the more you will be afflicted by adidaivic miseries, drought, hurricane, earthquake, etc., pestilence, can't think of the word, when the disease, when big disease, everybody's getting it.
Epidemic.
Thank you. So that's what happens when you disconnect from God. Let's take an example. Communist society in Russia after before and after Second World War. Right? Big long queues. To get what? There's nothing on the shelves in the food stores. Big long queues. In a fascist dictatorship. Don't believe in God. In fact, we banned God. We banned all churches. We banned religion. You'll be punished if you suggest such a thing. The government is all supreme. Well, who gets all of the good stuff in a communist society? The party members. The cream goes to the top. And everyone else suffers. Because it's a godless society. It's not normal. It's not natural. It's just like the branch being severed from the tree. It can't sustain. The communist society couldn't sustain either. We have in the Western world, in recent times, been moving closer and closer to fascism. Dictatorship. One world order. In the EU. One currency, the euro. Controlled by the few. It's way easier to control and manipulate one currency than it is 27 currencies, or 25, or whatever it is. It's becoming a fascist dictatorship. What's the proof? The CEO differential, where did I write this? Well, I remember it. The wage and the expansion of wages, you know, when people get a promotion or a raise, pay raise, is now 475-1. That's the ratio. That's the proportion. 475 is what the executives are getting, and one is what the workers are getting. The executives, the wealthy people who are controlling and manipulating things, are 475 times more highly remunerated than the workers. And that also took place during the Third Reich in Germany, Second World War. That's the current reality that we're dealing with. The United States is still the wealthiest, technically the wealthiest country in the world. And you've got this whole middle class section of the population that are losing their houses, they don't have jobs, and they can't look after their families. It remind you of anything nearby here? Same here. We're enjoying a resurgence here now in economy. But the same thing happened here. Because we don't have enlightened leaders. We don't have compassionate leaders. We don't have God-conscious leaders. This is absolutely essential. United Nations was set up, Prabhupada has many funny things to say about the disunited nations. And it's all about each country trying to get its own sense gratificatory needs met. That's what it is. It's like, okay, I need this, yeah, but I need that, and this country needs this, and this person needs that. Where's the good of the whole? They don't think like that in the United Nations. They act as if they do, but that's not how it works. Okay. Oh, here it is, right here. Yeah. It's the CEO to worker pay discrepancy, 475 to 1. So, what does Krishna say? Daivi yesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante mayame tang tarantite. Which means, this divine energy of mine, maya, material energy, mahamaya, consisting of the three modes of nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, sattva, rajas, tamas, is very difficult to overcome. Well, that's nice of Krishna to say that. Frankly, it's impossible to overcome. Oh, it's very difficult, all right. It's impossible. This is Kali Yuga. I mean, humanity is at its lowest point, in case you didn't know that, in Kali Yuga, the Iron Age. We're weak. No offense, friends. We're weak. And we get weaker. We don't get stronger. The more we engage and indulge in sense gratification, the more we cut the branches off the tree and our connection to God and Spirit, the weaker we get. The more confused we get, the more bewildered we get, and the more we drive our whole world and our economies down the drain. That's what's happening. So it's not only difficult to overcome, then Krishna, the rest of the statement is, but those who have surrendered to me, maya metam tarantite, can easily cross beyond it. Easily cross beyond it. How are you going to get from here to London? Can you swim across the Irish Sea? It's an idea. No, you take the Krishna ferry. And that's how you get out of the material world. I know myself. I've looked in the mirror and I said to myself, there's no way in the world you're going to be able to get out of here. Despite your sincere desire to get out of here, you're too damn weak. That's what I've told myself. Unless Krishna comes in and throws me a lifeline, I can't imagine getting out of here. So the closer we get to God, the better the opportunity, the easier it becomes for us. Now I'm speaking about me, in terms of myself there a moment ago. But that's the reality we're dealing with. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, all souls in the material world are tightly bound by the ropes of illusion, the gunas, three modes of nature. A person bound by the hands and feet, can he free himself? Not possible. He must be helped by someone who is unbound. Well, there's a concept. You're all tied up. Can you untie me? Yeah, that's what you're going to say. Hopefully somebody, right? So who is that? Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be free. Therefore, only God or a liberated soul. Liberated soul. That's the guru. If he's a liberated soul. Prabhupada was a liberated soul. Therefore, only God or a liberated soul can release a bound or conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of samsara, repeated birth and death. Even in the next paragraph, which you won't read, he goes on and talks about, you can pray to Shiva. Shiva can't get you out of here. You can pray to Brahma. Brahma's the creator, Shiva's the destroyer, and Vishnu is the maintainer of the material cosmos. Brahma can't get you out of here. Shiva can't get you out of here. Shiva can take you to all kinds of high places and high states of consciousness. But he cannot ultimately get you out of the material world. Okay. It is the duty of the guardians of children to revive divine consciousness. So he's talking about reviving divine consciousness in this other paragraph. And traditionally in the Vedic system, when you raise a child in divine consciousness, he goes through the Dasha Vidha Sangskaras, the purificatory ceremonies. You know the Sangskaras? Do you know what they're equivalent to in Western religion? Sacraments. The rites of passage. There are garbhadan, impregnation. I'll tell you this story quickly. I had become a devotee. I had this great passion to study Sanskrit. I was determined to learn Sanskrit. A book landed in my lap at the Toronto Temple, where I was studying away. Then we went to visit C. Prabhupada in Chicago in the summer of 75. There were about 300-400 devotees there from all over. And they had sent out a newsletter asking for people. We need people to come and join Bhaktivedanta Press because there's a big push on to publish Prabhupada's books. He had translated all these books. And Prabhupada said to the devotees, he says, you don't love me. I have done all this for you. You don't publish. You know, you're going like a snail, like a tortoise. Why do you not publish the books? And so he said it nicely, but it was kind of a wake-up call. So there was a big push on the press marathon, and I talked to the devotees that were traveling with Prabhupada and were transcribing his translations, and a Sanskrit editor was traveling with him at the time. It was Nitai. And I said, gee, I'd love to go to the Sanskrit department. And I was living in Canada at the time. And so we were in Chicago. And I said, yeah, I'd love to go. And they said, well, do you know any Sanskrit? And I said, yeah, I've been studying. I said, well, I don't really know that much. So they stuck a Sanskrit Srimad Bhagavatam in front of me and said, read it. And they stood there and looked at me. So I stumbled through and I read, and they said, whoa, that's good, Prabhu. Okay, you're going to join the Sanskrit department. I am? Yep. Can you leave tomorrow? Tomorrow? Yep, we'll get you an airplane ticket. You'll be flying from Chicago to Los Angeles tomorrow. Well, I'm getting my second initiation with Prabhupada tomorrow. Oh, okay. Day after. That was it. I was gone. I was there. When I studied Sanskrit, I began and edited Prabhupada's books. I found the Shatkriyasar Dipika, written by Jiva Goswami. And it was all the sangskaras, which are these sacraments to be performed. So I translated them. But you needed to know when to do them at the most auspicious time. And in order to do that, you had to know Vedic astrology. So I had little choice. I had to learn Vedic astrology so I would be able to organize all this for my wife and I to bring in God-conscious beings. That's what they're for. They're to bring in conscious souls. They're to attract conscious souls. They're to appeal to Vishnu to send a portion of himself into the womb. That's what the Garbhadhan Sangskar is for. So there's 10 of them, and at the time I was then the guy who did all of the sangskaras for the devotees in Los Angeles. I did all of the yajnas and the mantras and the rituals. That's what I did for a few years. So it's about going through a process of purification and realization. The sangskaras are very powerful in shifting the impressions, the imprints of former lifetimes, and purifying them and bringing in the divine energies. So one can ultimately escape Maya and transcend Maya. All right. Some, just last statement. One of the snares of Maya is to think you're God. If you were God, you could not, by definition, fall into illusion. The sun may be covered by clouds from our vantage point, our point of view. We look up, all we see is cloud. The sun itself is never covered by cloud. It's above the clouds. So, God can never be covered by cloud or illusion. So anyone who thinks they're God and is subject to Maya, no. Okay, so that's Maya in a nutshell. Thank you for your kind attention. Questions, comments?
You mentioned something about EU currency, Euro and European Union. Like introduction, one world government or something like that. One example of how it goes today's society, that main building of EU Parliament in Strasbourg is made not similar than exactly like Babel Tower.
In Strasbourg? In Brussels?
Yes, in Brussels, of European Parliament, main building.
Like the Tower of Babylon?
Yes, exactly. Not similar exactly like the Babel Tower. And it is, in Christianity, in the Bible, is that is example of atheism. Of atheism, of godless.
Yeah. Atheism.
Yes.
Tower of Babel, when no one could understand each other. Miscommunication all around. Mm-hmm. Or no one's listening to each other, as the case may be. I think the positive side of what's going on in the world is there's a huge rising up of the people. That's what's really going on. The people have not been in control for the longest time. And there are so many corrupt leaders. It's a plutocracy. It's whoever has the money is controlling everything. And it's gotten worse and worse and worse. You cannot remunerate somebody into the billions where the workers cannot afford to pay for their mortgage, send their families to school, feed their families. No, that cannot be sustained. And that's what demoniac behavior is. That can't sustain. And now we're seeing a rising. What you need to understand about Trump is Trump is the Molotov cocktail, the petrol bomb being thrown into Washington. Now, we don't know what he's going to do yet, but it's not going to be business as usual exactly as it has been for so many years. He's an outsider. So we'll just have to see. But, you know, there was the Brexit, now Trump. So the people are rising up. That's, as far as I can see it, that's what's happening. It's a good thing that we are rising up and we're not going to stand for all the nonsense that's been going on for so long. So, you know, viva la revolución. Even, I'm getting a few of these here and even Cuba is coming out of the darkness these days.
I read last night, I don't know, it's probably true, that Catholic Church as institution is actually second in the world in monetary value and income to the United States government.
Yeah.
It's that big.
Yeah.
And especially it's been controlling behind the scenes at most things.
Oh, yeah.
Financially.
Yeah. Their real estate portfolio is second to none throughout the world. Yeah, and you know, the Catholic Church has been exposed recently, and you know, how many priests are in Ireland, the Catholic country? How many people are coming to be, how do they say it? Not initiated, but ordained into the priesthood. I think they had 5 last year. 5 men. That's not very many in a Catholic country. It's very little. People are disillusioned.
I think the radio, the newspapers, and the television were meant for the teachers and the great teachers. I think this is true.
Yeah, absolutely true.
And I live in a very small street, and when I'm going home, I see televisions on. And
yeah, well, it's a perfect way to brainwash everybody.
It's false. Mm-hmm. But the teachers came, and teachers. Are here, so it's unfortunate. I'm sure that scientists and engineers have been consulted if they would have said because for this great teaching and the teacher.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the media is a mass brainwashing organ. And that's what's been going on. If you want any real news, you have to look at alternative media. I buy the newspaper and my wife looks at me, she goes, "Why do you read that garbage?" I says, "Because I want to keep informed."
Any happenings that are happening around the world, be it Trump or Towers of Babylon, and like this stuff is in plan for many, many centuries, possibly even longer. You know, you read the manuscripts of the Bible way back. Like, every upper end happening has all been well documented well before it happened. Maybe not this precise person, but the description of the person that's to go into power. Like, it's all been long ago decided. Do you really believe...
Where did you read that?
I got it from a lot of different evidence that I see. Like, I'm not saying Trump was chosen specifically, but I mean, like, the breed of type of... Like, it even says there...
Yes.
Read descriptions of government there.
Yeah, exactly.
Taxes, demonic,
it's Kali Yuga.
It's all there.
It's all there.
The question is, do you believe that, I just see that any, I hate putting labels on things, but so-called elite is already hundreds of steps ahead of your average Joe Soap.
Yeah, you're right. But
down to water taxes now when there's 10 million things going on. Do you really think any class of revolution would have any bearing on... Like, personally, I just see the only solution for me is getting out of
Krishna.
Like, I don't see
sitting
around here with that
card. No, I agree with you completely. That's the only solution. But if this is a resurgence of consciousness since Chaitanya appeared, then that means also that there can be a resurgence of conscious people coming into power at some point in time. Maybe Narendra Modi is an example of that in India, you know, who actually appreciates God consciousness, what I said earlier. No, we are here trying to encourage people to become God conscious. That is the most important thing. Kali Yuga will continue, but anything where the people are being mistreated and taken advantage of, and I can, if I'm seeing that it's perhaps being turned around in favor of the people, it's a good thing. That's all I'm saying on that level. It's not a transcendental level. I know that. But how will it become a transcendental level if the leaders are not realized or initiated souls? They have to be. I mean, Prabhupada said, they said, I don't remember the quote. They said to Prabhupada, "Well, Prabhupada, you seem to have a long-range plan." "Yes." "Well, how long-range is your plan?" 10,000 years. 10,000 years? "Yes." Yes. You know, it won't be my generation who are raised as meat eaters and sense indulgers, or my children's generation necessarily, but as we progress, it becomes more and more purified. That's what I was talking about. And people of higher souls of higher consciousness will come in, and sooner or later, I mean, there is a devotee girl from Hawaii who was a member of Congress, for example. You see? So the more we have conscious people in positions of power or government throughout the world, we can have our revolution of consciousness within this 10,000 year minor period. It's a golden age within the Iron Age. That's what we have. That's what Chaitanya, that was the purpose of his incarnation. So I agree with you. Anybody else?
I can add something that she said on that most of big events in so-called democratic society is planned in advance, much years before. I searched some, saw some presentation on internet. In 1995, they are issued some cards, like playing cards, called Illuminati, like conspiracy.
Illuminati, yeah.
And one of the cards was attack of twins 9/11.
Yeah.
One of the cards was attack on Pentagon. One of the cards was this bomb attack on Boston Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And it exactly. It says nobody will suspect an innocent joker, and it was a lady in green shirt. And when you see the this what is going on, a lady in the marathon in green shirt was throwing the ball on Boston Marathon.
Yeah.
And in that card is predicted that Trump will get election 2016. And that card what it was issued 1995. So this is Freemasonry also.
There you go. Well, we started...
We live in democracy, but everything is already arranged, and people think that they have, like, that they their vote is meaning something. But this is all...
No, we can't. Just because certain powers that be have orchestrated things because of their wealth, etc., that doesn't mean we give up.
Yes,
we don't fight.
Agree.
Arjuna gave up. Well, as soon as Krishna took his chariot between the two armies, Arjuna said, okay, that's it, I'm done. Threw down his bow, his arrows, I can't fight. I can't kill my relatives. Wait a second, Arjuna. There's a lot of people here. Everybody's gathered. What do you mean you're not going to fight now? You're the champion. This is your duty. No matter what, we do our duty. No matter the odds. What were the odds in the Mahabharata? 7-1? Wasn't it 7-1?
That was
Kurukshetra. Yeah. Was it?
I think so.
Yeah. The Kauravas had seven times as many. Was it 7-1 or 7-4? There you go. Yeah. One had 11 Akshauhinis, or divisions of army. That was the Kauravas, and the Pandavas had 7. May as well quit. There's no point fighting. We're outnumbered. No. No. We continue. That's what Bhagavad Gita is. Convincing Arjuna to do his duty. His duty was as a warrior. What's your duty? You do your duty, whatever your duty is. You make your contribution. You spread the light. You spread your consciousness in any small way that you can. It doesn't matter. You don't say, yeah, but I'm only one person, or I'm this, I'm that. We need it. So that we get critical mass. Everything starts to move together and brings about the transformation that we want. We just considering, oh, well, there's not much I can do. No. We're not going to do that.
Transformation of consciousness.
Transformation of consciousness. Viva la God conscious revolution.
Arrivo.
Now we have kirtan. Go ahead. Sorry.